situations before, been shot at, knifed, even had acid thrown at him once. Every time he'd been cool, almost detached when he'd had to be. Now, one little thump and I'm panicking. He clawed at his collar. The air's stuffy in this damn room. He willed himself to breathe slowly and deeply. I'll just call Garcia. We'll investigate together. And find nothing. Then he noticed that the rustling of feet overhead had changed its rhythm. Instead of the scraping and sliding he'd heard before, now he heard a constant drumming, like the sound of running feet. As he listened, he thought he heard a faint screaming. Dread flooded through him. There was another thump in the electrical room. Sweet Jesus, something big's happening. He grabbed his radio. Garcia, you copy? Requesting backup to investigate suspicious noises in the electrical systems room. Waters swallowed. Garcia wasn't responding on the regular frequency. As Waters holstered his radio, he noticed that the geek had stood up and was heading for the electrical room.
What are you doing?
Waters asked.
I want to see what that noise is, the geek said, opening the door. I think the air conditioner might have failed again.
He put his hand around the door frame, feeling for a light switch.
Wait a minute, you, Waters said. Don't...
Waters' radio burst into static.
We've got a stampede in here. All units, mobilize for emergency evacuation. Can't hold this crowd. We need backup. Now! Now!
Jesus!
Waters grabbed his radio, punched buttons. In an instant, all bands had been taken. He could hear something terrible happening right over his head. Shit! Waters looked up. The geek was gone, and the door to the electrical room was open, but the light inside was still off. Why was the light still off? Without taking his eyes from the open door, he carefully unshouldered his shotgun, pumped the slug into the chamber, and started forward. Carefully, he moved up to the edge of the door, looked around. Blackness.
Hey, you, he said. You in there?
As he moved inside the darkened room, he felt his mouth go dry. There was a sudden loud thump to his left, and Waters instinctively dropped to his knee and pumped three rounds, each one a flash of light and deafening blast. There was a shower of sparks, and a gout of flame licked upward, briefly illuminating the room with lambent orange light. The geek was on his knees, looking up at Waters.
Don't shoot, the geek said, his voice breaking. Please don't shoot anymore.
Waters raised himself on trembling legs, ears ringing.
I heard a sound, he cried. Why didn't you answer me, you stupid shit?
It was the air conditioner, the geek said, tears streaming down his face. It was the air conditioner pump failing, like before.
Waters backed up, feeling behind him for the wall switch. Gunpowder hung in the air like a blue fog. On the far wall, a large mounted box of metal was smoking from three large ragged holes in its front casing. Waters hung his head, sank back against the wall. With a sudden pop, an electrical arc sliced across the ruined box, followed by a crackling and another shower of sparks. The acrid air grew foul. The lights in the computer room flickered, dimmed, brightened. Waters heard one alarm go off, and then another.
What's happening?
He shouted. The lights dimmed again.
You destroyed the central switching box, the geek cried, rising to his feet and running past him into the computer room.
Oh, shit, Waters breathed.
The lights went out. 46. Coffee shouted again into the radio.
Augusta, come in!
He waited.
Shit!
He switched to the security command channel.
Garcia, what the hell is going on?
I don't know, sir. I think Lieutenant Augusta said there was a body in... Sir, I'm getting reports of panic in the exhibition. The guards are...
Coffee cut him off and switched the bands, listening.
We got a stampede in here!
The radio squawked. The agent switched back to security command.
Garcia, get the word out. All units, prepare for emergency evacuation procedures.
He turned to look across the great rotunda. through the east door into the Hall of the Heavens. A visible ripple passed through the crowd, and the background chatter began to die away. Over the sounds of the band, Coffey could hear clearly now the sound of muffled screams and the low thunder of running feet. The movement toward the exhibition entrance faltered. Then the crowd surged backward, rebounding like a pressure wave. There were some angry yells and confused shouts, and Coffey thought he heard crying. Again, the crowd was still. Coffey unbuttoned his jacket and turned toward the agents in the forward station.
"Emergency crowd control procedures, move out!"
Suddenly, the crowd surged backward, and a frenzy of shouting and screaming broke from the open door of the hall. The band faltered, then fell silent. In an instant, everyone was running toward the exit to the great rotunda.
"Go, you son of a bitch," said Coffey, shoving one of his men in the back, holding his radio in his right hand. "The Gusta, you copy?"
As the crowd began to pour out of the hall, the agents collided with the surging mass and were forced back. Thrusting himself from the roiling mass of bodies, Coffey backed away slightly, panting and cursing.
"It's like a tidal wave," one of his men yelled. "We'll never make it in."
Suddenly the lights dimmed. Coffey's radio crackled again.
"Garcia here. Listen, sir. All the security lights have gone red. The board's lit up like a Christmas tree. The perimeter alarms are all coming on."
Coffey moved forward again, fighting to stand his ground against the crowd streaming past him. He could no longer see the other agents. The lights flickered a second time, and then he felt a low rumble from the direction of the hall. Coffey looked up and saw the thick edge of the metal security door descending from a slot in the ceiling.
"Garcia!" Coffey shouted into the radio. "The east door is coming down. Shut it off. Get it back up, for Christ's sake."
"Sir, their controls indicate it's still up. But something's happening down here. All the systems are..."
"I don't give a fuck what the controls say. It's coming down."
He was suddenly spun around by the fleeing crowd. The screaming was continuous now, a strange, banshee-like keening noise that raised the hair on a person's neck. Coffey had never seen anything like it. Never. Smoke, emergency lights blinking, people running over other people, glassy panic in their eyes. The metal detectors had been knocked over and the X-ray machines shattered as people in tuxedos and gowns went running out into the pouring rain, clawing past each other, stumbling and falling across the red carpet and onto soaked pavement. Coffey saw little flashes on the steps outside the museum, first a few and then several. He yelled into his radio,
"Garcia, alert the cops outside. Have them restore order. Get the press the hell out of there. And have them get that door up now."
"They're trying, sir, but all the systems are failing. We're losing power. The emergency doors drop independent of the power grid, and they can't activate the failsafe controls. Alarms are going off all over the place."
A man coming through nearly bowled Coffey over as he heard Garcia shout,
"Sir, total system failure."
"Garcia, where the fuck is the backup system?"
He forced a path sideways and found himself pinned against the wall. It was no use. He wasn't going to get inside through the stampede. The door was now halfway down.
"Give me the technician. I need the manual override code."
The lights flickered a third time and went out, plunging the rotunda into darkness. Over the screams, the rumble of the descending door continued relentlessly. Pendergast ran his hand over the rough stone wall of the cul-de-sac, rapping a few places lightly with his knuckles. The plaster was cracking and flaking off in pieces, and the light bulb in the ceiling was broken. Opening the bag, he withdrew the yellow object, a miner's hat, adjusted it carefully on his head, and flicked on its switch. Tilting his head, he ran the powerful beam of light over the wall in front of him. Then he pulled out the creased blueprints, directing the light onto them. He walked backward, counting his steps. Then, taking a penknife from his pocket, he placed its point into the plaster and gently twisted the blade. A piece of plaster the size of a dinner plate fell away, revealing the faint tracings of an ancient doorway. Pendergast jotted in his notebook, stepped out of the cul-de-sac, and paced along the hall, counting under his breath. He stopped opposite a stack of crumbling sheetrock. Then he pulled it sharply away from the wall. The material fell with a crash and a great billowing of white dust. Pendergast's light exposed an old panel set low in the wall. He pressed the panel appraisingly. It held fast. When he kicked it savagely, it flew open with a screech. A narrow service tunnel slanted steeply downward, opening onto the ceiling of the sub-basement beneath. One floor below him, a thread of water trickled along like an inky ribbon. Pendergast pulled the panel back into place, made another marking on the blueprint, and continued on.
Pendergast! This is Dr. Frock. Can you hear me?
Pendergast stopped, his brows knitted in surprise. He opened his mouth to answer. Suddenly he froze. There was a peculiar smell in the air. Leaving his bag open on the floor, he ducked into a storage room, locked the door behind him, and reached up, snapping off his light. The door had a small, wired glass window set into its middle, grimy and cracked. Fishing in a pocket, he drew out a tissue, spat on it, rubbed the window, and peered out. Something big and dark had just entered the lower edge of his field of view. Pendergast could hear a snuffling sound like a winded horse breathing heavy and fast. The smell grew stronger. In the dim light, Pendergast could see a muscled Withers covered with coarse black hair. Moving slowly, taking short, choppy breaths through his nose, Pendergast reached inside his suit jacket and drew out the .45. In the darkness, he passed his finger across the cylinder, checking the loaded chambers. Then, steadying the revolver with both hands and leveling it at the door, he began to back up. As he moved away from the window, the shape dropped from view, but he knew beyond any doubt that it was still out there. There was a faint bump on the door, followed by a low scratching. Pendergast tightened his grip on the revolver as he saw, or thought he saw, the doorknob begin to turn. Locked or not, the rickety door wouldn't stop whatever was outside. There was another muffled thump, then silence. Pendergast quickly peered out the window. He could see nothing. He held the revolver at 12 o'clock with one hand and placed his other hand on the door. In the listening silence, he counted to 5. Then, quickly, he unlocked the door and swung it open, moving into the center of the passageway and around a corner. At the far end of the hall, a dark shape paused at another door. Even in the dim light, he could make out the strong, sloping movements of a quadruped. Pendergast was the most rational of men, but he barked a brief laugh of disbelief as he saw the creature claw for the doorknob. The lights in the hallway dimmed, then brightened. Pendergast slowly dropped to one knee, held the gun in combat position, and took aim. The lights dimmed a second time. He saw the creature sit back on its haunches and then rise up, turning toward him. Pendergast centered on the side of the head, let his breath flow out. Then he slowly squeezed the trigger. There was a roar and a flash as Pendergast relaxed to absorb the kickback. For a split second, he saw a white streak move straight up the beast's cranium. Then the creature was gone, around a far corner, and the hallway was empty. Pendergast knew exactly what had happened. He had seen that streak of white once before, hunting bear. The bullet had ricocheted off the skull, taking a strip of hair and skin while exposing the bone. The perfectly placed shot with a metal-jacketed, chromium-alloy-tipped .45-caliber bullet had bounced off the creature's skull like a spitball. Pendergast slumped forward and let his gun hand sink toward the floor as the lights flickered again and went out. 47. From where he'd stood next to the hors d'oeuvres table, Smithback had a great view of Wright standing at the microphone, gesturing, voice booming out from a nearby loudspeaker. Smithback hadn't bothered to listen. He knew with gloomy certainty that Rickman would provide him with a hard copy of the speech later. Now the speech was over, and the crowd had been eagerly piling into the new exhibition for the past half hour. But Smithback remained where he stood, oblivious. He gazed once again down at the table, debating whether to eat a fat Gulf prawn or a tiny blini au caviar. He took the blini, actually five, and began grazing. The caviar, he noted, was gray and not salty. Real sturgeon, not the fake whitefish they tried to pass off at publishing parties and the like. He snagged a prawn anyway, made it two, followed by a spoonful of ceviche, and three crackers covered with Scottish smoked cod roe with capers and lemon, a few paper-thin slices of cold red Kobe beef, no steak tartare, thank you very much, but definitely two pieces of that uni sushi. His gaze followed the array of delicacies that went on for 50 feet worth of table. He had never seen anything like it, and he wasn't about to let any of it get away. The band suddenly faltered, and almost simultaneously, somebody elbowed him hard in the ribs. "Hey," Smithback started to say, when, looking up, he almost instantly found himself engulfed in a shoving, grunting, screaming mass of people. He was thrown against the banquet table. He struggled to regain his footing, slipped and fell, then rolled under the table. He crouched, watching the thundering feet go by. There were screams and the horrifying noises of bodies crashing full tilt into one another. He heard a few snatches of shouted phrases. "Dead body! Murder!" Had the killer struck again in the middle of thousands of people? It wasn't possible. A woman's shoe, black felt with a painfully high spiked heel, bounced under the table and came to rest near his nose. He shoved it away with disgust, noticed he was still clutching a morsel of shrimp in his hand, and bolted it down. Whatever was happening fast. It was shocking how quickly panic could sweep a crowd. The table shuddered and slid, and Smithback saw an enormous platter land just beyond the fringe of the tablecloth. Crackers and camembert went flying. He grabbed crackers and cheese off his frilled shirt and started eating. 12 inches from his face, he could see scores of feet stamping and churning a loaf of pâté into mud. Another platter landed with a splat, spraying caviar across the floor in a gray mist. The lights dimmed. Smithback quickly shoved a wedge of camembert into his mouth, holding it between his teeth, realizing suddenly that he was eating while the biggest event he'd ever seen was being handed him on a silver platter. He checked his pockets for the microcassette recorder as the lights dimmed and brightened. Smithback talked as fast as he could, mouth close to the microphone, hoping his voice would come through over the deafening roar of humanity. This was an incredible opportunity. The hell with Rickman. Everyone was going to want this story. He hoped that if any other journalists were at the party, they were running like hell to get out. The lights flickered again. 100,000 for the advance. He wasn't going to take a dime less. He was here. He'd covered the story from the beginning. Nobody could touch his access. The lights flickered for a third time, then went out. "Son of a bitch!" yelled Smithback. "Somebody turn on the lights!" Margot pushed Frock around another corner, then waited while he called again for Pendergast. The sound echoed forlornly.
"This is growing pointless. There are several larger storage rooms in this section. Maybe he's inside one, can't hear us. Let's try a few. That's all we have left."
He grunted as he fished in the jacket pocket.
"Don't leave home without it."
He smiled, holding up a curator's master key. Margot unlocked the first door and peered into the gloom.
"Mr. Pendergast?"
she called out. Metal shelves stacked with enormous bones rose out of the gloom. A big dinosaur skull, the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, sat near the door on a wooden skid, still partially encased in matrix, black teeth gleaming dully.
"Next!"
The lights dimmed. No answer in the next storage room either.
"One more try. Over there, across the hall."
Margot stopped at the indicated door marked Pleistocene 12B, noting as she did so a stairwell door at the far end of the hall. She was pushing open the storage room door as the lights flickered a second time.
"This is..."
Suddenly, a sharp explosion resounded down the narrow hall. Margot looked up, heart pounding, trying to locate the source of the noise. It seemed to have come from around a corner they had not yet explored. Then the lights went out.
"If we wait a moment, the the emergency backup system will come on.
Only the faint creaking of the building pierced the silence. The seconds stretched into a minute, 2 minutes. Then Margot noticed a strange smell, goatish, fetid, almost rank. With a sob of despair, she remembered where she had smelled it once before, in the darkened exhibition.
Do you?
Yes. Get inside and lock the door.
Breathing fast, Margot groped at the doorframe. She called out quietly as the smell grew stronger.
Dr. Frock, can you follow the sound of my voice?
There's no time for that. Please, forget about me and get inside.
No. Just come toward me slowly.
She heard his chair rattle. The smell was growing overpowering, the earthy, rotting odor of a swamp mixed with the sweet smell of warm, raw hamburger. Margot heard a wet snuffling.
I'm right here. Oh, hurry, please.
The darkness seemed oppressive, a suffocating weight. She cringed against the doorframe, flattening herself to the wall, fighting down an urge to flee. In the pitch black, wheels rattled and the chair bumped gently against her leg. She grabbed its handles and pulled Frock inside. Turning, she slammed the door closed, locked it, and then sank to the floor, her body rocked by noiseless sobs. Silence filled the room. There was a scraping on the door, soft at first, then louder and more insistent. Margot shrank away, banging her shoulder against the frame of the wheelchair. In the dark, she felt Frock gently take her hand. 48. D'Gusta sat up amid the broken glass, grabbed for his radio, and watched the retreating backs of the last guests, their screams and shouts fading. Lieutenant? One of his officers, Bailey, was getting up from underneath another broken case. The hall was a shambles. Artifacts broken and scattered across the floor, broken glass everywhere, shoes, purses, pieces of clothing. Everybody had left the gallery except D'Gusta, Bailey, and the dead man. D'Gusta looked briefly at the headless body, registering the gaping wounds in the chest, the clothing stiffened by dried blood, the man's insides generously exposed like so much stuffing. Dead for some time, apparently. He looked away, then looked back quickly. The man was wearing a policeman's uniform.
Bailey, he shouted. Officer down, who is this man?
Bailey came over, his face pale in the dim light.
Hard to say, but I think Fred Beauregard had a big old academy ring like that.
No shit.
D'Gusta whistled under his breath. He bent closer and got the badge number. Bailey nodded.
That's Beauregard, Lou.
Christ,
D'Gusta said, straightening up.
Wasn't he on his 48?
That's correct. Last tour was Wednesday afternoon.
Then he's been in here since.
D'Gusta started. His face hardened into a scowl.
That fucking coffee refusing to sweep the exhibition. I'm gonna tear him a new asshole.
Bailey helped him up. You're hurt.
I'll bind it up later.
D'Gusta said tersely.
Where's McNitt?
I don't know. Last time I looked, he was caught in the crowd. Ippolito stepped from around the far corner, talking into his radio. D'Gusta's respect for the security director went up a notch. He may not be the brightest guy, but he's got balls when it comes to the pinch. The lights dimmed.
There's panic in the Hall of Heavens, said Ippolito, ear at his radio. They say the security wall by the east door is coming down. Those idiots, that's the only exit.
He raised his own radio.
Walden, you copy, what's going on?
Sir, it's chaos here. McNitt just came out of the exhibition. He got pretty roughed up in there. We're at the exhibition entrance, trying to slow the crowd, but it's no use. There's a lot of people getting trampled, Lieutenant.
The lights dimmed a second time.
Walden, is the emergency door coming down over the exit to the rotunda?
Just a second. Shit, yes. It's halfway down and still dropping. People are jammed into that door like cattle. It's gonna crash a dozen or two.
Suddenly, the exhibition went black. A dull crash of something heavy toppling to the ground momentarily overpowered the cries and screams. DeGusta pulled out his flashlight.
Ippolito, you can raise the door with the manual override, right?
Right. Anyway, the backup power should come on in a second.
We can't wait around for that. Let's get the hell over there. And for Christ's sake, be careful.
Gingerly, they picked their way back toward the exhibition entrance, Ippolito leading the way through the welter of glass, broken wood, and debris. Broken pieces of once priceless artifacts lay strewn about. The shouting and screaming grew louder as they neared the Hall of the Heavens. Standing behind Ippolito, DeGusta could see nothing in the vast blackness of the hall. Even the votive candles had guttered. Ippolito was playing his flashlight around the entrance.
Why isn't he moving? DeGusta wondered irritably.
Suddenly, Ippolito jerked backward, retching. His flashlight dropped to the ground and rolled away in the darkness.
What the hell?
DeGusta shouted, running forward with Bailey. Then he stopped short. The huge hall was a shambles. Shining his flashlight into the gloom, DeGusta was reminded of earthquake footage he'd seen on the evening news. The platform was broken into several pieces, the lectern splintered and shattered. The bandstand was deserted, chairs toppled over, crushed instruments lying in heaps. The floor was a maelstrom of food, clothing, printed programs, toppled bamboo trees, and trampled orchids, twisted and smashed into strange landscape by the thousands of panicked feet. DeGusta brought the flashlight in toward the exhibition entrance itself. The huge wooden stele surrounding the entrance had collapsed in giant pieces. DeGusta could see limp arms and legs protruding from beneath the intricately carved columns. Bailey rushed over.
There are at least 8 people crushed here, Lieutenant. I don't think any of them are still alive.
Any of them ours?
DeGusta asked.
I'm afraid so. Looks like McNitt and Walden, and one of the plainclothesmen. There are a couple of guards' uniforms here, too, and 3 civilians, I think.
All dead? Every one of them?
Far as I can tell, I can't budge these columns.
Shit.
DeGusta looked away, rubbing his forehead. A loud thud resonated from across the hall.
That's the security door closing, said Ippolito, wiping his mouth.
He knelt at Bailey's side.
Oh, no. Martin. Christ, I can't believe it.
He turned to DeGusta.
Martin here was guarding the back stairwell. He must have come over to help control the crowd. He was one of my best men.
DeGusta threaded his way between the broken columns and moved out into the hall, dodging the upturned tables and broken chairs. His hand was still bleeding freely. There were several other still forms scattered about, whether dead or alive, DeGusta couldn't tell. When he heard screaming from the far end of the hall, he shined his light toward the noise. The metal emergency door was fully shut, and a crowd of people were pressed against it, pounding on the metal and shouting. Some of them turned around as DeGusta's light illuminated them. DeGusta ran over to the group, ignoring his squawking radio.
Everybody calm down and move away. This is Lieutenant DeGusta of the New York City Police.
The crowd quieted a little, and DeGusta called Ippolito over. Scanning the group, DeGusta recognized Wright, the director. Ian Cuthbert headed this whole farce. Some woman named Rickman, who seemed pretty important. Basically, the first 40 or so people who'd entered the exhibition. First in, last out.
Listen up,
he shouted.
The security director's going to raise the emergency door. Everybody, please step back.
The crowd moved aside, and DeGusta involuntarily groaned. There were several limbs pinned under the heavy metal door. The floor was slick with blood. One of the limbs was moving feebly, and he could hear faint screaming from the far side of the door.
"Dear Jesus," he whispered. "Ippolito, open the son of a bitch."
"Shine your light over here."
Ippolito pointed to a small keypad next to the door, then crouched and punched in a series of numbers. They waited. Ippolito looked nonplussed.
I can't understand.
He punched in the numbers again, more slowly this time.
There's no power, said DeGusta. Shouldn't matter, said Ippolito, frantically punching a third time. The system's got redundant backups.
The crowd started to murmur.
We're trapped,
one man yelled. The Gusta whirled his light onto the crowd.
All of you just calm down. That body in the exhibition has been dead at least 2 days, you understand? 2 days. The murderer's long gone.
How do you know?
Shouted the same man.
Shut up and listen, said the Gusta. We're going to get you out of here. If we can't open the door, they'll do it from the outside. It may take a few minutes. In the meantime, I want you all to get away from the door, stick together, find yourself some chairs that aren't broken, and sit down, okay? There's nothing you can do here.
Wright stepped forward into the light.
Listen, officer, he said. We've got to get out of here. Ippolito, for the love of God, open the door.
Just a moment, said Augusta sharply. Dr. Wright, please return to the group.
He looked around at the wide-eyed faces.
Are there any physicians here?
There was a silence.
Nurses? First aid?
I know some first aid, someone volunteered.
Great. Arthur
Pound?
Pound. Get one or two volunteers to help you. There are several people who look like they got trampled. I need to know number and their condition. I've got a guy back at the exhibition entrance, Bailey, who can help you. He's got a flashlight. We also need a volunteer to help collect some candles.
A young, lanky fellow in a wrinkled tuxedo came out of the gloom. He finished chewing, swallowed.
I'll help with that, he said.
Name?
Smithback.
Okay, Smithback. You got matches?
Sure do.
The mayor stepped forward. His face was smeared with blood, and a large purple welt was emerging beneath one eye.
Let me help, he said.
DeGusta looked at him with amazement.
Mayor Harper, maybe you can take charge of everyone. Keep them calm.
Certainly, Lieutenant.
DeGusta's radio squawked again, and he grabbed it.
DeGusta, this is Coffee. DeGusta, do you read? What the hell's going on in there? Give me a sit rep.
DeGusta talked fast. Listen up. I'm not going to say this twice. We've got at least 8 dead, probably more, and an undetermined number of wounded. I guess you know about the people caught under the door. Ippolito can't get the fucking door open. There's about 30, maybe 40 of us here, including Wright and the mayor.
The mayor? Shit. Look, DeGusta, the system's failed totally. The manual override doesn't work on this side either. I'll get a crew with acetylene to cut you guys out. It may take a while. This door is built like a bank vault. Is the mayor okay?
He's fine. Where's Pendergast?
I don't have a clue.
Who else is trapped inside the perimeter?
Don't know yet. We're taking reports now. There should be some men in the computer room and security command, Garcia and a few others. Might be a few on the other floors. We got several plainclothes officers and guards out here. They were pushed out with the crowd. Some of them got messed up pretty bad. What the hell happened in the exhibition, DeGusta?
They found the body of one of my men stuffed on top of an exhibit. Got it just like the rest.
He paused, then spoke bitterly.
If you'd let me do the sweep I requested, none of this would have happened.
The radio squawked again and went silent.
Pound,
DeGusta called.
What's the extent of the injuries?
We've got one man alive, but just barely, Pound said, looking up from an inert form.
The rest are dead, trampled. Maybe one or two heart attacks, it's hard to say.
Do what you can for the live one, DeGusta said.
His radio buzzed.
Lieutenant DeGusta, this is Garcia in security command, sir. We got...
The voice trailed out in a burst of static.
Garcia! Garcia, what is it?
DeGusta shouted into the radio.
Sorry, sir, the batteries on this mobile transmitter I'm using are weak. We got Pendergast on the honk. I'm patching him over to you. Vincent?
Pendergast, where are you?
I'm in the basement, Section 29. I understand the power is out throughout the museum and that we are trapped inside Cell 2. I'm afraid I've got a little more bad news of my own to add. Could you please move to a spot where we can speak privately?
DeGusta walked away from the crowd.
What is it?
He asked in a low tone.
Vincent, listen to me carefully. There is something down here. I don't know what it is, but it's big. And I don't think it's human.
Pendergast, don't play with me, not now.
Vincent, I'm entirely serious. That isn't the bad news. The bad news is, it may be headed your way.
What do you mean? Well, what kind of animal is it?
You'll know when it's near. The smell is unmistakable. What kind of weapons do you have?
Let's see. 3 12-gauges, a couple of service revolvers, 2 sharp pistols loaded with capstan. A few odds and ends, maybe.
Forget the capstan. Now listen, we have to talk fast. Get everyone out of there. This thing went by me just before the lights went out. I saw it through a window in one of the storage rooms down here, and it looked very big. It walks on all fours. I got off 2 shots at it, then it went into a stairwell at the end of this hall. I've got a set of old blueprints here with me, and I've checked them. You know where that stairwell comes out?
No, said DeGusta.
It only has access to alternate floors. It leads down into the sub-basement, too, but we can't assume the thing would go that way. There's an egress on the 4th floor, and there's another one behind the Hall of the Heavens. It's back in the service area behind the platform.
Pendergast, I'm having a hard time with this. What the hell exactly you want us to do?
I'd get your men, whoever has the shotguns, and line up at that door. If the creature comes through, let the thing have it. It may have already come through, I don't know. Vincent, it took a .45 metal-jacketed slug in the skull at close range, and the bullet grazed right off.
If anyone else had been speaking, DeGusta would have suspected a joke, or madness.
Right, he said. How long ago was this?
I saw it a few minutes ago, just before the power went out. I shot at it once, then followed it down the hall after the lights went. I got off another shot, but my light wasn't steady, and I missed it. I went down to reconnoiter just now. The hall dead ends, and thing has vanished. The only way out is the stairwell leading up to you. It may be hiding in the stairwell, or maybe, if you're lucky, it's gone to a different floor. All I know is that it hasn't come back this way.
DeGusta swallowed.
If you can get into the basement safely, do it. Meet up with me here. These blueprints seem to show the way out. We'll talk again once you're in a more secure place. Do you understand?
Yes, said DeGusta.
Vincent, there's something else.
What now?
This creature can open and close doors.
DeGusta holstered his radio, licked his lips, and looked back toward the group of people. Most were sitting on the floor, stunned, but a few were trying to help light the armload of candles the lanky guy had scrounged. DeGusta spoke to the group as softly as he could.
All of you, move over here and get down against the wall. Put those candles out.
What is it?
Somebody cried. DeGusta recognized the voice as Wright's.
Quiet, do as I say. You, what's your name, Smithback? Drop that and get over here.
DeGusta's radio buzzed into speech as he did a quick visual sweep of the hall with his flashlight. The remote corners of the hall were so black they seemed to eat the beam of his light. In the center of the hall, a few candles were lit next to a still form. Pound and somebody else were bending over it.
Pound, he called out. Both of you, get back over here.
But he's still alive.
Get back now,
he turned to the crowd that was huddling behind him.
None of you move or make a sound. Bailey and Ippolito, bring those shotguns and follow me.
Did you hear that? Why do they need their guns?
Cried Wright. Recognizing Coffey's voice on the radio, DeGusta switched it off with a brusque movement. Moving carefully, flashlights probing the darkness ahead of them, the group crept toward the center of the hall. DeGusta played his beam along the wall, found the service area, the dark outlines of the stairwell door. It was closed. He thought he smelled something strange in the air, a peculiar, rotten odor he couldn't place. But the room stunk to begin with. Half the damn guests must have lost control of their plumbing when the lights failed. He led the way into the service area, then stopped.
According to Pendergast, there's a creature, an animal, maybe in this stairwell, he whispered. According to Pendergast, said Ippolito sarcastically under his breath, Stole that shit, Ippolito. Now listen up. We can't stay here waiting in the dark. We're gonna go in nice and easy, okay? Do it by the numbers. Safety's off, shells in the chambers. Bailey, you're gonna open the door, then cover us with the light. Fast. Ippolito, you'll cover the upward staircase, and I'll cover the down. If you see a person, demand identification and shoot if you don't get it. If you see anything else, shoot immediately. We move on my signal.
DeGusta switched off his flashlight, slipped it in a pocket, and tightened his grip on the shotgun. Then he nodded for Bailey to direct his own light under the stairwell door. DeGusta closed his eyes and murmured a brief prayer in the close darkness. Then he gave the signal. Ippolito moved to the side of the door while Bailey yanked it open. DeGusta and Ippolito rushed in, Bailey behind them, sweeping the light in a quick semicircle. A horrible stench awaited them inside the stairwell. DeGusta took a few steps down into the darkness, sensed a sudden movement above him, and heard an unearthly, throaty growl that turned his knees to putty, followed by a dull slapping sound like the smacking of a damp towel against the floor. Then wet things were hitting the wall around him, and gobs of moisture splattered his face. He spun around and fired at something large and dark. The light was gyrating wildly. "Shit!" he heard Bailey wail. "Bailey, don't let it go into the hall!" He fired into the darkness, again and again, up the stairwell and down, until he was pumping an empty chamber. The acrid smell of gunpowder blenched with the nauseating reek as screams resounded in the hall of the heavens. DeGusta stumbled up the stairs to the landing, almost tripped over something, and moved into the hall.
"Bailey, where is it?"
he yelled as he jammed shells into his shotgun, temporarily blinded by the muzzle flare.
"I don't know," Bailey shouted. "I can't see. Did it go down or through?"
Two shells in the shotgun. Three.
"I don't know, I don't know."
DeGusta pulled out his flashlight and shone it on Bailey. The officer was soaked in thick clots of blood. Pieces of flesh were in his hair, hanging from his eyebrows. He was wiping his eyes. A hideous smell hung in the air.
"I'm fine," Bailey reassured DeGusta. "I think. I just got all this shit on my face. I can't see."
DeGusta swept the light around the room in a fast arc, the shotgun braced against his thigh. The group, huddled together against the wall, blinked in terror. He turned the light back toward the stairwell and saw Ippolito, or what was left of him, lying partway on the landing, dark blood rapidly spreading from his torn gut. The thing had been waiting for them just a few steps up from the landing. But where the fuck was it now? He shined the light in desperate circles around the hall. It was gone. The huge space was still. No. Something was moving in the center of the hall. The light was dim at that distance, but DeGusta could see a large, dark shape crouched over the injured man on the dance floor, lunging downward with odd, jerking motions. DeGusta heard the man wail once. Then there was a faint crunching noise and silence. DeGusta propped the flashlight in his armpit, raised his gun, aimed, and squeezed the trigger. There was a flash and a roar. Screams erupted from the huddled group. Two more shots and the chamber was again empty. He reached for more shells, came up empty, dropped the shotgun, and drew his service revolver.
"Bailey!"
he yelled.
"Get over there fast! Get everyone together and prepare to move!"
He swept the light across the floor of the hall, but the shape was gone. He moved carefully toward the body. At 10 feet, he saw the one thing he'd wanted not to see. The split skull and the brain spread across the floor. A bloody track led into the exhibition. Whatever it was had rushed inside to escape the shotgun blast. It wouldn't stay there long. DeGusta leaped up, raced around the columns, and yanked one of the heavy wooden exhibition doors free. With a grunt, he slammed it to, then raced over to the far side. There was a noise inside the exhibition. A swift, heavy tread. He slammed the second door shut and heard the latch fall. Then the doors shuddered as something heavy hit them.
"Bailey!"
he yelled.
"Get everyone down the stairwell!"
The pounding grew stronger, and DeGusta backed up involuntarily. The wood of the door began to splinter. As he aimed his gun toward the door, he heard screams and shouts behind him. They'd seen Ippolito. He heard Bailey's voice raised in argument with Wright. There was a sudden shudder, and a great crack opened at the base of the door. DeGusta ran across the room.
"Down the stairs, now! Don't look back!"
No, screamed Wright, who was blocking the stairwell. Look at Ippolito, I'm not going down there.
There's a way out, shouted Augusta.
No, there isn't, but through the exhibition and...
There's something in the exhibition, Augusta yelled. Now get going!
Bailey moved Wright forcibly aside and started pushing people through the door, even as they cried and stumbled across the body of Ippolito.
At least the mayor seems calm, Augusta thought. Probably saw worse than this at his last press conference.
I'm not going down there, Wright cried. Cuthbert, Lavinia, listen to me. That basement's a death trap, I know. We'll go upstairs. We can hide on the fourth floor. Come back when the creature's gone.
The people were through the door and staggering down the stairwell. Augusta could hear more wood splintering. He paused a moment. There were 30-odd people below him, only 3 hesitating on the landing.
This is your last chance to come with us, he said.
We're going with Dr. Wright, said the public relations director.
In the gleam of the flashlight, Rickman's drawn and fearful face looked like an apparition. Without a word, Augusta turned and followed the group downward. As he ran, he could hear Wright's loud, desperate voice calling for them to come upstairs. 49. Coffee stood just inside the tall archway of the museum's west entrance, watching the rain lash against the elaborate glass and bronze doors. He was shouting into his radio, but Augusta wasn't responding. And what was this shit Pendergast was slinging about a monster? The guy was bent to begin with, he figured, and the blackout sent him over the edge. As usual, everyone had screwed up, and once again it was up to Coffee to clean up the mess. Outside, 2 large emergency response vehicles were pulling up at the entrance, and police in riot gear were pouring out, moving quickly to erect A-frames across Riverside Drive. He could hear the wailing of ambulances frantically trying to nose their way through the steel grid of radio cars, fire engines, and press vans. Crowds of people were scattered around, crying, talking, standing in the rain or lying beneath the museum's vast awning. Members of the press were trying to slip past the cordon, snaking their microphones and cameras into faces before being pushed back by police. Coffee sprinted through the pelting rain to the silver bulk of the mobile command unit. He yanked open the rear door and jumped inside. Within the MCU, it was cool and dark. Several agents were monitoring terminals, their faces glowing green in the reflected light. Coffee grabbed a headset and sat down.
Regroup!
He shouted on the command channel. All FBI personnel to the mobile command unit. He switched channels.
Security command, I want an update.
Garcia's voice came on, weary and tense.
We still have total system failure, sir. The backup power hasn't kicked in. They don't know why. All we have are our flashlights and the batteries in this mobile transmitter.
So, start it manually.
It's all computer-driven, sir. Apparently there is no manual start.
And the security doors?
Sir, when we took those power dips, the entire security system malfunctioned. They think it's a hardware problem. All the security doors were released.
What do you mean, all?
The security doors on all 5 cells closed. It isn't just cell 2. The whole museum's shut down tight.
Garcia, who there knows the most about the security system?
That'd be Allen.
Put him on.
There was a brief pause.
Tom Allen speaking.
Allen, what about the manual overrides? Why aren't they working?
Same hardware problem. The security system was a third-party installation, a Japanese vendor, Sakura Electronics. We're trying to get a representative on the phone now, but it's tough. The phone system is digital, and it went out when the computer shut down. We're routing all calls through Garcia's transmitter. Even the T1 lines are out. It's been a chain reaction since the switching box was shot to hell.
Oh, I didn't know.
Some cop, what's his name, Waters, on duty in the computer room, thought he saw something, fired a couple of shotgun rounds into the main electrical switching box.
Look, Allen, I want to send a team in to evacuate those people trapped in the Hall of the Heavens. The mayor's in there, for Christ's sake. How can we get in? Should we cut through the east door into the hall?
Those doors are designed to retard cutting. You could do it, but it would take forever.
What about the sub-basement? I hear it's like a friggin' catacomb down there.
There might be ingress points from where you are, but online charts are down, and the area isn't fully mapped. It would take time.
The walls, then. How about going through the walls?
The lower load-bearing walls are extremely thick, 3 feet in most places. and all the older masonry walls have been heavily reinforced with rebar. Cell 2 only has windows on the third and fourth floor, and they are reinforced with steel bars. Most of them are too small to climb through anyway.
Shit. What about the roof?
All the cells are closed off, and it would be pretty tough.
God damn it, Alan. I'm asking you the best way to get some men inside. There was a silence.
The best way to get in would be through the roof,
came the voice.
The security doors on the upper floors are not as heavy. Above the Hall of Heavens, cell 3 extends. That's the fifth floor. You can't enter there, though. The roof is shielded because of the radiography labs. But you could come in through the roof of cell 4. In some of the narrower halls, you might be able to blow a security door to cell 3 with one charge. Once you were in cell 3, you could go right through the ceiling of the Hall of the Heavens. There's an access port for servicing the chandelier in the hall ceiling. It's 60 feet to the floor, though.
I'll get back to you. Coffee out. He punched at the radio and shouted, Ippolito! Ippolito, you copy? What the hell was happening inside that hall? He switched to DeGusta's frequency. DeGusta, this is Coffee. Are you reading me? He ran frantically through the bands. Waters!
Waters here, sir.
What happened, Waters?
There was a loud noise in the electrical room, sir, and I fired as per regulations, and...
Regulations? You fucking turkey, there's no regulation for firing at a noise.
Sorry, sir, it was a loud noise, and I heard a lot of screaming and running in the exhibition, and I thought...
For this, Waters, you're dead. I'm gonna have your ass roasted and sliced up like luncheon meat on a platter. Think about it.
Yes, sir.
Outside, there was a cough, sputter, and a roar as a large portable generator started up. The rear door to the mobile command unit opened, and several agents ducked in, their suits dripping. The rest are on their way, sir, one of them said. Okay. Tell them we're having a crisis control meeting here in the MCU in 5 minutes. He stepped out into the rain. Emergency services workers were moving bulky equipment in yellow acetylene tanks up the museum steps. Coffee ran back through the rain and up the steps into the debris-laden rotunda. Medics clustered at the metal emergency door blocking the east entrance to the Hall of the Heavens. Coffee could hear the whine of a bone saw. "Tell me what you've got," Coffee asked the leader of the medical team. The doctor's eyes looked strained above his blood-flecked mask. "I don't know the full extent of the injuries yet, but we've got several criticals here. We're performing some field amputations. I think a few others might be saved if you can get this door open in the next half hour." Coffee shook his head. "Doesn't look like that will happen. We're gonna have to cut through it." An emergency worker spoke up. "We've got some heat-proof blankets we can lay across these people as we work." Coffee stepped back and raised his radio. "DeGusta, Ippolito, come in!" Silence. Then he heard a hiss of static.
"DeGusta here. Listen, Coffee.
Where have you been? I told you..."
"Shut up and listen, Coffee. You were making too much noise. I had to shut you off. We're down in the sub-basement. I'm not sure where. There's a creature loose somewhere in cell 2. I'm not kidding you, Coffee. It's a fucking monster. It killed Ippolito and ran into the hall. We had to get out."
"A what? You're losing it, DeGusta. Get a grip, you hear me? We're sending men in through the roof."
"Yeah, well, they better have some heavy shit ready if they plan on meeting up with this thing."
"DeGusta, let me handle it. What's this about Ippolito?"
"He's dead. Slashed open, just like all the other stiffs."
"And a monster did this. Okay, sure. Any other police officers with you, DeGusta?"
"Yeah, there's Bailey."
"I'm relieving you of duty. Put Bailey on."
"Fuck you. Here's Bailey."
"Sergeant," Coffee barked. "You're in charge now. What's the situation?"
"Mr. Coffee, he's right. We had to leave the Hall of the Heavens. We went down the back stairwell near the service area. There's over 30 of us, including the mayor. No shit, there's really something in here."
"Give me a break, Bailey. Did you see it?"
"I'm not sure what I saw, sir, but DeGusta saw it, and Jesus, sir, you should see what it did to Ippolito."
"Listen to me, Bailey. Are you going to calm down and take over?"
"No, sir. As far as I'm concerned, he's in charge."
"I just put you in charge." Coffee snorted and looked up, enraged. "The son of a bitch just cut me off." Outside in the rain, Greg Kawakita stood motionless amid a cacophony of yelling, sobbing, and cursing. He remained oblivious to the pelting rain that plastered his black hair to his forehead. The emergency vehicles that passed by, sirens shrieking, the panicky guests that jostled him as they ran past. Again and again he replayed in his mind what Margot and Frock had barked at him. He opened and closed his mouth, moved forward as if to re-enter the museum. Then, slowly, he turned, pulled his sodden tuxedo closer around his narrow shoulders, and walked thoughtfully into the darkness. 50. Margot jumped as a second gunshot echoed down the hall.
"What's happening?"
she cried. In the darkness, she felt Frock's grip tighten. Outside, they heard running steps. Then the yellow glow of a flashlight streaked by beneath the doorframe.
"That smell is growing fainter. Do you think it's gone?"
"Margot, you saved my life. You risked your own life to save mine."
There came a soft knocking at the door.
"Who is it?"
"Pendergast,"
a voice said, and Margot rushed to open the door. The FBI agent stood outside, a large revolver in one hand and crumpled blueprints in the other. His crisp, well-tailored black suit contrasted with his dirt-streaked face. He shut the door behind him.
"I'm pleased to see you both safe and sound,"
he said, shining his light first on Margot and then Frock.
"Not half as pleased as we are. We came down here searching for you. Were those shots yours?"
"Yes. And I assume it was you I heard calling my name."
"Then you did hear me. That's how you knew to look for us in here."
Pendergast shook his head.
"No."
He handed Margot a flashlight as he started unfolding his crumpled blueprints. Margot saw they were covered with handwritten notes.
"The New York Historical Society will be very unhappy when they see the liberties I've taken with their property. Pendergast, Margot and I have discovered exactly what this killer is. You must listen. It isn't a human being or any animal we know. Please, let me explain."
Pendergast looked up.
"I don't need any convincing, Dr. Frock."
"You don't? You will? I mean, you will help us stop the opening upstairs to get the people out?"
"It's too late for that. I've been talking by police radio to Lieutenant DeGusta and others. This power failure isn't just affecting the basement, it's affecting the entire museum. The security system has failed, and all the emergency doors have come down."
"You mean..."
"I mean the museum has been compartmentalized into 5 isolated cells. We're in cell 2, along with the people in the Hall of Heavens, and the creature."
"What happened?"
"There was a panic even before the power went out and the doors came down. A dead body was discovered inside the exhibition, a police officer. Most of the guests managed to get out, but 30 or 40 are trapped inside the Hall of the Heavens."
He smiled ruefully.
"I was in the exhibition myself just a few hours before. I wanted to get a look at this Mboon figurine you mentioned. If I'd gone in by the rear exit instead of the front, perhaps I would have found the body myself and prevented all this. However, I did get a chance to see the figurine, Dr. Frock, and it's an excellent representation. Take it from somebody who knows."
Frock stared, his mouth open.
"You've seen it?"
"Yes. That's what I was shooting at. I was down around the corner from this storeroom when I heard you call my name. Then I noticed an awful smell. I ducked into a room and watched it go by. I came out after it and got off a shot, but it grazed off the thing's scalp. Then the lights went out. I followed it around the corner and saw it grasping at this door, snuffling."
Pendergast flicked open the revolver's cylinder and replaced the 2 spent cartridges.
"That's how I knew you were in here."
"My God."
Pendergast holstered his gun.
"I got off a second shot at it, but I was having trouble aiming my weapon and I missed.
I came down this way to look for it, but the thing had vanished. It must have gone into the stairwell at the end of the corridor. There's no other way out from this cul-de-sac. Mr. Pendergast, tell me, please, what did it look like?
I saw it only briefly. It was low, extremely powerful-looking. It walked on all fours but could rear upright. It was partially covered with hair.
He pursed his lips, nodded.
It was dark. But I'd say whoever made that figurine knew what he was doing.
In the glow of Pendergast's light, Margot saw a strange mix of fear, exhilaration, and triumph cross Frock's face. Then a series of muffled explosions echoed and re-echoed above them. There was a brief silence, and then more reports, sharper and louder, boomed nearby. Pendergast looked upward, listening intently.
"DeGusta!"
Drawing his gun and dropping the blueprints, he raced out into the corridor. Margot ran to the door and shined the flashlight down the hallway. In its thin beam, she could see Pendergast rattling the stairwell door. He knelt to inspect the lock, then, standing, he gave the door a series of savage kicks.
"It's jammed shut," he said when he returned. "Those shotgun blasts we heard sounded like they came from inside the stairwell. Some of the slugs must have bent the door frame and damaged the lock. It won't budge."
He holstered the gun and pulled out his radio.
"Lieutenant DeGusta, Vincent, can you hear me?"
He waited a moment, then shook his head and replaced the radio in his jacket pocket.
"So we're stuck here?"
Pendergast shook his head.
"I don't think so. I've spent the afternoon down in these vaults and tunnels trying to determine how the beast was able to elude our searches. These blueprints were drafted well before the turn of the century, and they are complicated and contradictory, but they seem to show a route out of the museum through the sub-basement. With everything sealed off, there's no other feasible way out for us. And there are several ways to access the sub-basement from this section of the museum."
"That means we can meet up with the people still upstairs, then escape together."
Pendergast looked grim.
"But that also means the beast can find its way back into the sub-basement. Personally, I think that while these emergency doors may prevent our own rescue, they won't hamper the beast's movement much. I believe it's been around long enough to find its own secret ways, and that it can move throughout the museum, or at least the lower levels, practically at will."
Margot nodded.
"We think it's been living in the museum for years, and we think we know how and why it came here."
Pendergast looked searchingly at Margot for a long moment.
"I need you and Dr. Frock to tell me everything you know about this creature as quickly as possible."
As they turned to enter the storeroom, Margot heard a distant drumming, like slow thunder. She froze, listening intently. The thunder seemed to have a voice. Crying or shouting, she wasn't sure which.
"What was that?"
"That is the sound of people in the stairwell, running for their lives."
51. In the faint light filtering in through the barred laboratory window, Wright could barely make out the old filing cabinet. It was damned lucky, he thought, that the lab was inside the perimeter of Cell 2. Not for the first time, he was glad he'd kept his old laboratory when he'd been promoted to director. It would provide them with a temporary safe haven, a little breathing room. Cell 2 was now completely cut off from the rest of the museum, and they were effectively prisoners. Everything, all the emergency bars, shutters, and security gates had come down during the loss of power. At least that's what he'd heard that incompetent police officer DeGusta say.
"Someone is going to pay dearly for this," Wright muttered to himself.
Then they all fell quiet. Now that they had stopped running, the enormity of the disaster began to sink in. Wright moved gingerly forward, pulling out one file cabinet drawer after another, fishing behind the folders until at last he found what he was looking for.
"Ruger 38 Magnum," he said, hefting it in his hands. "Great pistol, excellent stopping power."
I'm not sure that's going to stop whatever killed Ippolito, said Cuthbert.
He was standing near the laboratory door, a still figure framed in black. Don't worry, Ian. One of these speedball bullets would perforate an elephant. I bought this after old Shorter was mugged by a vagrant. Anyway, the creature isn't coming up here, and if he does,